Chapter 6. Caleb Plummer and his blind daughter lived all alone by themselves, as the storybooks say, and my blessing, with yours to back it, I hope, on the storybooks, for saying anything in this workaday world. Caleb Plummer and his blind daughter lived all alone by themselves, in a little cracked nutshell of a wooden house, which was, in truth, no better than a pimple on the prominent red brick nose of Gruff and Tackleton. The premises of Gruff and Tackleton were the great feature of the street, but you might have knocked down Caleb Plummer's dwelling with a hammer or two, and carried off the pieces in a cart. If anyone had done the dwelling house of Caleb Plummer the honor to miss it after such an inroad, it would have been, no doubt, to commend its demolition as a vast improvement. It stuck to the premises of Gruff and Tackleton, like a barnacle to a ship's keel, or a snail to a door, or a little bunch of toadstools to the stem of a tree. But it was the germ from which the full-grown trunk of Gruff and Tackleton had sprung, and, under its crazy roof, the Gruff before last had, in a small way, made toys for a generation of old boys and girls, who had played with them, and found them out, and broken them, and gone to sleep. I have said that Caleb and his poor blind daughter lived here. I should have said that Caleb lived here, and his poor blind daughter somewhere else in an enchanted home of Caleb's furnishing, where scarcity and shabbiness were not, and trouble never entered. Caleb was no sorcerer, but in the only magic art that still remains to us, the magic of devoted deathless love, nature had been the mistress of his study, and from her teaching, all the wonder came. The blind girl never knew that ceilings were discolored, walls blotched and bare of plaster here and there, high crevices unstopped and widening every day, beams moldering and tending downward. The blind girl never knew that iron was rusting, wood rotting, paper peeling off, the size, and shape, and true proportion of the dwelling, withering away. The blind girl never knew that ugly shapes of delf and earthenware were on the board, that sorrow and faint-heartedness were in the house, that Caleb's scanty hairs were turning grayer and more gray, before her sightless face. The blind girl never knew they had a master, cold, exacting, and uninterested, never knew that Tackleton was Tackleton in short, but lived in the belief of an eccentric humorist who loved to have his jest with them, and who, while he was the guardian angel of their lives, disdained to hear one word of thankfulness. And all was Caleb's doing, all the doing of her simple father. But he too had a cricket on his hearth, and listening sadly to its music, when the motherless blind child was very young, that spirit had inspired him with the thought that even her great deprivation might be almost changed into a blessing, and the girl made happy by these little means. For all the cricket tribe are potent spirits, even though the people who hold converse with them do not know it, which is frequently the case, and there are not in the unseen world voices more gentle and more true, that may be so implicitly relied on, or that are so certain to give none but tenderest counsel, as the voices in which the spirits of the fireside and the hearth address themselves to humankind. Caleb and his daughter were at work together in their usual working room, which served them for their ordinary living room as well, and a strange place it was. There were houses in it, finished and unfinished, for dolls of all stations in life. Suburban tenements for dolls of moderate means, kitchens and single apartments for dolls of the lower classes, capital town residences for dolls of high estate. Some of these establishments were already furnished according to estimate, with a view to the convenience of dolls of limited income. Others could be fitted on the most expensive scale, at a moment's notice, from whole shelves of chairs and tables, sofas, bedsteads, and upholstery. The nobility and gentry, and public in general, for whose accommodation these tenements were designed, lay, here and there, in baskets, staring straight up at the ceiling, but, in denoting their degrees in society, and confining them to their respective stations, which experience shows to be lamentably difficult in real life, the makers of these dolls had far improved on nature, who is often froward and perverse. Therefore, they, not resting on such arbitrary marks as satin, cotton print, and bits of rag, had superadded striking personal differences which allowed of no mistake. Thus, the doll lady of distinction had wax limbs of perfect symmetry, but only she and her compeers. The next grade in the social scale being made of leather, and the next of coarse linen stuff. As to the common people, they had just so many matches out of tinder boxes, for their arms and legs, and there they were established in their sphere at once, beyond the possibility of getting out of it. There were various other samples of his handicraft, besides dolls, in Caleb Plummer's room. There were Noah's Arks, in which the birds and beasts were an uncommonly tight fit, I assure you, though they could be crammed in, anyhow, at the roof, and rattled and shaken into the smallest compass. By a bold poetical license, most of these Noah's Arks had knockers on the doors, inconsistent appendages, perhaps, as suggestive of morning callers and a postman, yet a pleasant finish to the outside of the building. There were scores of melancholy little carts, which, when the wheels went round, performed most doleful music. Many small fiddles, drums, and other instruments of torture, no end of cannon, shields, swords, spears, and guns. There were little tumblers in red breeches, incessantly swarming up high obstacles of red tape, and coming down, head first, on the other side. And there were innumerable old gentlemen of respectable, not to say venerable, appearance, insanely flying over horizontal pegs, inserted, for the purpose, in their own street doors. There were beasts of all sorts, horses, in particular, of every breed, from the spotted barrel on four pegs, with a small tippet for a mane, to the thoroughbred rocker on his highest mettle. As it would have been hard to count the dozens upon dozens of grotesque figures that were ever ready to commit all sorts of absurdities on the turning of a handle, so it would have been no easy task to mention any human folly, vice, or weakness that had not its type, immediate or remote, in Caleb Plummer's room. And not in an exaggerated form, for very little handles will move men and women to as strange performances as any toy was ever made to undertake. In the midst of all these objects, Caleb and his daughter sat at work. The blind girl busy as a doll's dressmaker, Caleb painting and glazing the four pair front of a desirable family mansion. The care imprinted in the lines of Caleb's face, and his absorbed and dreamy manner, which would have sat well on some alchemist or abstruse student, were at first sight an odd contrast to his occupation, and the trivialities about him. But, trivial things, invented and pursued for bread, become very serious matters of fact. And, apart from this consideration, I am not at all prepared to say, myself, that if Caleb had been a Lord Chamberlain, or a Member of Parliament, or a lawyer, or even a great speculator, he would have dealt in toys one whit less whimsical, while I have a very great doubt whether they would have been as harmless. So you were out in the rain last night, father, in your beautiful new greatcoat, apostrophe said Caleb's daughter. In my beautiful new greatcoat, apostrophe answered Caleb, glancing towards a clothesline in the room, on which the sackcloth garment previously described, was carefully hung up to dry. How glad I am you bought it, father! Apostrophe, apostrophe, and of such a tailor too, apostrophe said Caleb. Quite a fashionable tailor. It's too good for me. Apostrophe, the blind girl rested from her work, and laughed with delight. Too good, father. What can be too good for you? Apostrophe, I'm half ashamed to wear it though, apostrophe said Caleb, watching the effect of what he said, upon her brightening face, upon my word. When I hear the boys and people say behind me, halloa, here's a swell. I don't know which way to look. And when the beggar wouldn't go away last night, and when I said I was a very common man, said, no, your honor. Bless your honor, don't say that. I was quite ashamed. I really felt as if I hadn't a right to wear it. Apostrophe, happy blind girl. How merry she was, in her exultation. I see you, father, apostrophe she said, clasping her hands, as plainly, as if I had the eyes I never want when you are with me. A blue coat, apostrophe, bright blue, apostrophe said Caleb. Yes, yes. Bright blue, apostrophe exclaimed the girl, turning up her radiant face, the color I can just remember in the blessed sky. You told me it was blue before. A bright blue coat, apostrophe, made loose to the figure, apostrophe suggested Caleb. Made loose to the figure. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried the blind girl, laughing heartily. And in it, you, dear father, with your merry eye, your smiling face, your free step, and your dark hair looking so young and handsome. Apostrophe, apostrophe, halloa, halloa, apostrophe said Caleb. I shall be vain, presently. I think you are, already, apostrophe cried the blind girl, pointing at him, in her glee. I know you, father. Ha, ha, ha. I found you out, you see. Apostrophe, apostrophe, how different the picture in her mind, from Caleb, as he sat observing her. She had spoken of his free step. She was right in that. For years and years, he had never once crossed that threshold at his own slow pace, but with a footfall counterfeited for her ear, and never had he, when his heart was heaviest, forgotten the light tread that was to render hers so cheerful and courageous. Heaven knows. But I think Caleb's vague bewilderment of manner may have half originated in his having confused himself about himself, and everything around him, for the love of his blind daughter. How could the little man be otherwise than bewildered, after laboring for so many years to destroy his own identity, and that of all the objects that had any bearing on it? There we are, apostrophe said Caleb, falling back a pace or two, to form the better judgment of his work, as near the real thing as sixpenneth of halfpence is to sixpence. What a pity that the whole front of the house opens at once. If there was only a staircase in it now, and regular doors to the rooms to go in at. But that's the worst of my calling, I'm always deluding myself, and swindling myself. Apostrophe, you are speaking quite softly. You are not tired, father? Apostrophe, tired. Apostrophe, apostrophe echoed Caleb, with a great burst of animation. What should tire me, Bertha? I was never tired. What does it mean? Apostrophe, to give the greater force to his words, he checked himself in an involuntary imitation of two half-length stretching and yawning figures on the mantel shelf, who were represented as in one eternal state of weariness from the waist upwards, and hummed a fragment of a song. It was a bacchanalian song, something about a sparkling bowl. He sang it with an assumption of a devil-may-care voice that made his face a thousand times more meager and more thoughtful than ever. What? You're singing, are you? Apostrophe said Tackleton, putting his head in at the door. Go it. I can't sing. Apostrophe, nobody would have suspected him of it. He hadn't what is generally termed a singing face, by any means. I can't afford to sing, apostrophe said Tackleton. I'm glad you can. I hope you can afford to work too. Hardly time for both, I should think. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you could only see him, Bertha, how he's winking at me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, whispered Caleb. Such a man to joke. You'd think, if you didn't know him, he was in earnest, wouldn't you now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the blind girl smiled and nodded. The bird that can sing and won't sing, must be made to sing, they say, apostrophe grumbled Tackleton. What about the owl that can't sing, and oughtn't to sing, and will sing? Is there anything that he should be made to do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the extent to which he's winking at this moment. Apostrophe, apostrophe, whispered Caleb to his daughter. Oh, my gracious. Apostrophe, always merry and light-hearted with us. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the smiling Bertha. Oh, you're there, are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, answered Tackleton. Poor idiot. Apostrophe, he really did believe she was an idiot, and he founded the belief, I can't say, whether consciously or not, upon her being fond of him. Well, and being there, how are you? Apostrophe said Tackleton, in his grudging way. Oh, well, quite well, and as happy as even you can wish me to be. As happy as you would make the whole world, if you could. Apostrophe, apostrophe, poor idiot. Apostrophe, apostrophe, muttered Tackleton. No gleam of reason. Not a gleam. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the blind girl took his hand and kissed it, held it for a moment in her own two hands, and laid her cheek against it tenderly, before releasing it. There was such unspeakable affection and such fervent gratitude in the act, that Tackleton himself was moved to say, in a milder growl than usual, What's the matter now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I stood it close beside my pillow, when I went to sleep last night, and remembered it in my dreams. And when the day broke, and the glorious red sun, the red sun, father, apostrophe, apostrophe, red in the mornings and the evenings, Bertha, apostrophe said poor Caleb, with a woeful glance at his employer. When it rose, and the bright light I almost fear to strike myself against in walking, came into the room, I turned the little tree towards it, and blessed heaven for making things so precious, and blessed you for sending them to cheer me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, bedlam broke loose. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tackleton under his breath. We shall arrive at the straight waistcoat and muffler soon. We're getting on. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Caleb, with his hands hooked loosely in each other, stared vacantly before him, while his daughter spoke, as if he really were uncertain, I believe he was, whether Tackleton had done anything to deserve her thanks, or not. If he could have been a perfectly free agent, at that moment, required, on pain of death, to kick the toy merchant, or fall at his feet, according to his merits, I believe it would have been an even chance which course he would have taken. Yet, Caleb knew that with his own hands he had brought the little rose tree home for her, so carefully, and that with his own lips he had forged the innocent deception which should help to keep her from suspecting how much, how very much, he every day, denied himself, that she might be the happier. Bertha, apostrophe, apostrophe, said Tackleton, assuming, for the nonce, a little cordiality. Come here. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.